This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Oh, the 4IR, Industry 2.0. Everything in South Africa is 4IR. Even that slab of chocolate. If I wanted to, I could make it a 4IR slab of chocolate. And the issue is we bandy the term around a lot, but have we really, really understood what it means in the field of science, in the field of industry, and in our day-to-day lives? We've now established quite well that if you've got a smartphone, you can transact on many, many levels using just the device. It can do almost everything for you. But how else do we leverage these technologies to make the country a better place? Now, as I say this, just yesterday, three scientists were awarded the Nobel Prize on Science and Physics. They are Alain Aspect, John F. Clauser, and Anton Zeilinger. And they were awarded a Nobel Prize for their work on what's called quantum weirdness. They've been pioneering experiments looking into the era of quantum information science, which is expected to revolutionize computing, cryptography, and ICT as we know it today. Now, whilst they were being notified of being the recipients of this year's Nobel Prize on Physics, the state president was addressing the SATU General Council, a two-day congress of the teachers' union. And in it, he spoke about the need to get our teachers future ready, prepare our schools for a future that is coming in this highly digitalized, high-tech world, and whether teachers were aware of what they're going to need to do to improve on their teaching methods as well. And then all of this tallies with South Africa being re-elected to the ITU Council, which is a specialized agency of the United Nations, the International Telecommunications Union. And so South Africa sits there helping to draft policy on ICT worldwide to align with development objectives for the United Nations. So three pillars, but that ultimately speak to a future unknown, but a future we should really be thinking about. And so to that end, we're having a conversation now with Spiwe Chikera, who's an independent telecommunications analyst. Spiwe, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Lovely to hear your voice. Honestly, my patriarchal bias was not expecting that.
It's all right. If I tell you the number of college correspondence and letters that I get that say, good morning, Mr. Rekha, then, you know...
I'm so sorry. You came as a pleasant surprise there on the other side of the line. Well, good morning to you, Spiwe Chikera. Okay, so let's start off with, you know, a term we hear a lot, 4IR. Mm-hmm. And I often respond with a comment I once heard, which said, there's no 4IR coming. We are already in the 4IR. Mm-hmm. The question we need to be asking ourselves is, what comes next and are we ready for that next? What's your response?
Yes, so you're absolutely right that, you know, maybe 3 years ago we're talking about, oh, the 4IR is coming, but we are definitely in the middle of it. And especially, you know, with the pandemic after the last 2 years, we've kind of been thrust into that environment. And I guess for most people, it's like, okay, what are we really on about, right, when we're talking about, you know, this 4IR thing? And if we're saying, we are already in it. So what exactly are we actually, you know, referring to? So I'd like to just really simplify it, right, and say, you know, think of the 4IR as an era where there is a lot of, I'll call it digitization and digitalization, right? So digitization just means taking what you could otherwise do manually and then making it, you know, digital. So, for example, now we can apply for a birth certificate online, right? That's like digitization. So it means, you know, filling out the form and queuing, we're no longer having to do that. And then the digitalization now, which is where the fun begins. It is actually completely replacing, call it tasks and just a way of living, right, with just a digital way, you know, of life. So, for example, like if we look at now in the work environment, right, COVID happened. And while we were used to, like, you know, you wake up, you go to the office, you've got your computer, everything is on there, we suddenly had to start putting things in the cloud, learning how to video conference, having call it edit documents at the same time from 10 different locations, etc. So it's just really changing the way we do things. But at the core of it, we've got, you know, the digital, like digital technologies playing a part in there. And so, yeah, that's where we start to embrace more and more of it, either replacing or helping to support what we otherwise would normally do.
And where does South Africa fit on that continuum of digitalization and evolution and changing how the world works? Is South Africa at the beginning of the process, in the middle of the process, or quite advanced?
Okay. So I would say South Africa is at the beginning of the process, right? Well, I'll put it this way. Maybe beginning, starting to, you know, go mainstream. So the reason I say that is that, you see, with South Africa, we don't have a consistent level of digitalization or digitization, right? So you'll find that if you look at sectors like the banking sector, the SMBs of this world, right, they are really far ahead, right? The Discovery Bank, they're quite ahead, right? Then when we look on the other hand, like our government departments, because the public sector is key, right, in this whole digitization journey, we are really quite behind, right? Like really, really behind. So because of that lack of consistency or the absence of that consistency, that's why I'm saying we're at the beginning, right, of that process. So what we're starting to see, and again, it's common, especially with other countries in our region, being Africa, is that with COVID, we started with the pandemic, right, the COVID pandemic, we started to actually see how far behind we were. So we found that in key sectors such as education, right, there is a need, there is a place for digitization. And we found ourselves wanting, right? We're way behind. And we also found, like I said, the inconsistencies that, you know what, on the one hand, you had some private schools that were able to really hit the ground running, but at the same time, you had a majority of public schools that were left behind. So the issue really with us being at the beginning is that what I like to call the digital divide that is there within our country, both from an, call it from a business perspective. So that's why I said the banks, as the public sector, but also from an individual perspective, right? So that's where I'm giving the comparison between, you know, the private school student and the public school student. So because of that divide, that is why our, call it our fourth industrial revolution or digitization aspirations will will somewhat lag rather than, you know, us, you know, being at the forefront of the, of the.
So that digital divide is bringing again the glaring reality of the inequalities in South Africa, where wealth gives you better access to education, better access to education gives you better devices, get a better aptitude at adopting digital technologies, and so two very different experiences in one country. Now, you mentioned the fact that government is where we're not seeing a transformation fast enough, but they've tried to migrate many of their systems online, you know, like how you apply for a passport, you could go to a bank, etc., etc. But those systems don't seem to have capacity, they keep crashing. You use the example of registering a birth certificate for a newborn baby or paying traffic fines. So this, there is a hodgepodge of digitalized services. It's the streamlining that's the problem. How can they get it right?
Okay, so when we look at the world of digitization, right, I always say let's not look at it, we tend to look at things in isolation, and I'll explain in a second what I mean. So when you look at the I like to look at it like the ecosystem of digitization, right? You've got the connectivity aspect, right? You've got skills to actually be able to, whether it's roll out or provide the digital services. You've got the actual services themselves. So right now, let's say we're talking about doing a birth certificate online. There's a whole host of other things that that you could actually do, right? And then we've got what I call access. So access is also about how do I access those services? So that's where things like our devices come in. our computers or the smartphones or the apps, right, that also come in. So now what we need to do is to look at the whole situation from that comprehensive lens, if I can call it that. So when we look in the space of government, we find that, yes, the services are growing, right? Things that are being digitized or put online. However, when we peer behind the curtain, do we have enough skills or the infrastructure to actually support those? So by infrastructure, I'm talking about the telecom connectivity. I'm talking about, you know, I'm sure you hear terms of like the cloud or the data centers to store all that information or people to be able to access that information. Do the government systems have enough processing capacity so that when 20,000 of us at the same time are trying to book an appointment for a driver's license, we can actually, the systems can sustain that. So we also have that aspect, like, you know, the infrastructure / connectivity bit. So when we take all of, and then also, I guess the last but not least, and it also falls under the, I guess, the access aspect, is the affordability as well. For us to be able to transact and operate in that world, right? Because think about it, while I'm no longer buying as much airtime for phoning these days, how much am I spending on data?
Yeah, so and when the lights are out, there's no data.
Exactly, right? And the lights go out, then what happens now? Because, you know, I'm used to now having my Wi-Fi at home, and now I must start thinking about bundles on top of the Wi-Fi. It can get expensive very fast. Right. So there's also that aspect. So when we look at, like, you know, like what we want to talk about now, like just, you know, the government and why they're lagging behind, all of these things then come into play. So I would say that on the services side, definitely kudos to our government. I mean, there is a lot of work happening, especially at the local government, municipal levels, where they're really trying to digitize a lot of things. However, then we've got the skills aspect, we've got the infrastructure aspect, we've got the access and affordability aspects that then still come into play. Okay. And as a result, we're starting to see, I'll call it a new type of inequality. It's actually a term that you find used in some for the digital inequality that is actually emerging. And it speaks to what you said earlier, that unfortunately, those with access, those who can get access to digital services will have more, you know, more access to education opportunities, job opportunities, et cetera, et cetera. So that is kind of like the reality that we can face with in this new era that we're in.
And the issue is the government can play a mitigating variable to try to balance it out. Simple things like free Wi-Fi at schools, sponsored iPads and laptops for children from disadvantaged backgrounds not to be left behind. What other interventions are needed? And I'm thinking here, so much was said and so much excitement was generated around the spectrum auctions. And it's constantly referred to as one of the important reforms of the Ramaphosa era. What does it mean exactly? And tangibly, can we feel the benefits of these recent spectrum auctions?
All right. So when we look at, I guess I'll touch a bit on like the interventions or the mitigations that may be required to really fix what is there. I would actually like to really, really emphasize that it is not just government's job alone, right? It also falls to the private sector or the companies that can actually do something about this to actually do something about it, right? So that's the first thing I just wanted to say. However, and I don't want to be like, you know, the prophet of doom and gloom, right? There have been some rays of light, right, in this whole thing. So, and I'm glad that you touched on the spectrum auction, right? So in all this that we're talking about, right, the digitalization, fourth industrial revolution, the fundamental underlying enabler is connectivity. Without affordable, good quality, easy to access connectivity, none of this means anything, right? So you and I, we can have all these fancy apps, but if it's taking me 20 minutes just to enter my name onto that app because, you know, the connectivity is wonky, it won't work, right? So the good thing is that our government actually has realized the fundamental importance of connectivity in the whole picture. Right. And unfortunately, sometimes you can't do everything at the same time. So you want to get one thing right and then move on to the next. And so one thing that I really, 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 also I was really excited about was when the spectrum auction finally happened. So that what it means is that, okay, fine, now our telecoms providers can actually offer us with us the speeds that we need to. They can now handle the growing traffic so that our experience and our ability to access some of these services is actually improved. But of course, it doesn't stop there. There is so much more that we still need to do, right? So at the end of the day, yes, now we've got the big pipe. But like I said, we cannot look at it in isolation. How affordable are the services going to be? So now we've sorted out maybe a quality of service aspect. Now we still have to look at how affordable are they or accessible. Right. Okay, do we have the skills? And the skills, I'm not talking about the guys behind the systems. I'm even talking about you and me, right? Our ability to do our birth certificates online. Can Gogo be able to do her birth certificate online? How have we designed this thing? As well as just looking at also the different other services that we can present. So it is a work in progress, right? And I'm sure you know 2 years ago we had that 4IR, Big Hua, the Presidential Commission. And on the one hand, some will say, well, COVID kind of threw things off track, and we get that, we understand. So we're also looking forward to see what that commission is now going to take on as part of phase two, because phase two was now about, let's get it happening.
So I like things to be simple. So if we were to use the examples you've raised in a very simple context, we'd say there was no road before and the government has built the road. But what it costs to build the road means that we now have to pay some kind of a levy or a toll on that road. And so we can all use the road, but it's going to cost us a little bit more to use it. But now there's a road.
It could be like that. Yes.
Okay. Okay. And they say that the future is quantum. And this is why these three scientists won this Nobel Prize for Physics, because apparently that's what comes next. Explain to us what that next looks like.
All right. So, and I'm going to use this in the, this is how I understand it, right? So when we look at where we are now, right, with this whole 4IR, digitization aspects, right? Number one, the sheer volume of transactions that we are now having to deal with on a day-to-day basis has just gone off the roof, right? Like I mentioned, I gave the example, 20,000 applications in 10 seconds. Can we handle that, for example? The amount of information that is just being generated just by us sitting here, you know, it's just a lot, right, because of all the digital touch points that we now have. So there's just this whole aspect of scale around, call it whether it's the transactions we're doing, whether it's the information that we are processing, whether it's the intelligence that's required at any given moment around us. And what is happening now is that we do need our systems to have to be able to handle that. The processing power, right, has to also grow as much as we are digitizing, as much as we're getting into the 4IR. So now when these new ways and efficient ways and call it accessible ways of actually being able to handle and process and store and share the vast amount of call it information transactions or the processing power that we need, because that's what I understand quantum computing to refer to, is that once we have that in place, then we're on our way to really reaping the rewards of what we've been talking about, you know, digitization, 4IR, the next gen.
So let's bring in Hopolang, one of our power listeners, who wants to ask about machine learning, which I think starts to get into this era of this coming quantum age. Hopolang, good morning.
Morning to you, Lerato, and your guest. Yeah, so with 4IR, there are other things that I think companies and governments need to consider, like machine learning, artificial intelligence, big data and data analytics, and how organizations can leverage from those types of things out there. And I don't see government going that route anytime soon, but we do know big companies like F&B that you mentioned and Discovery, they're actually stealing data or they're gathering data. And in the 4IR, it looks like data is the biggest component that is going around the world on being able to get as much data as from as much places as possible and using that data to actually understand markets and people. So if you look at Facebook, actually social media, companies are leveraging off of that data and also all types of data, even from how you interact online, interact with the internet. They're harnessing the data to understand a certain segment of the market or the market as a whole, and they can use that information to better place themselves to make better decision-making without necessarily doing surveys and those kind of things. So I think also that's where government needs to go to actually counter, things like census. If you harness big data and data analytics, you don't actually need census to a large extent because you do have the data there real-time every single day taking place.
Thanks a lot for that. Khobolang, data is key. It's the new gold, they tell us.
Yes. So I'm glad that Khobolang brought that up because one of the things I really wanted to emphasize is that now as we go into this era, it has become, you know, we talk about PPP, like, you know, public-private partnership. Now they've become critical. And I'm glad that he mentioned that, you know, you've got this, the private sector has the processing capacity. Government has the information. What if we actually start to create an environment where the two are actually working together? And this would be another conversation for another day around the issue of shared value, whereby let's work together using our core strengths to actually bring about the required outcomes in this era. And it can happen in the era of, you know, of digitization. So I'm glad that you brought that up. And I believe that, you know what, yes, it's not just government's responsibility alone, but that we actually can start to see FNB working with the Department of Health to actually help define certain challenges.
And that's a very good example. I just wanted to say, you know, shared value, we can just simplify it for our listeners. This is like saying, you know, the government knows who every South African is or should know because we should all have our IDs registered at Home Affairs. The banks know how many of those people have bank accounts. And so when there's an outbreak of COVID and the government says, I don't know where the COVID is, all that information in terms of Lerato is using her bank app right now in Houghton means she's in Houghton. This is her ID number. And if we give it to the hospital, they'll be able to track whether or not she's a risk or not a risk. And that's what data does to simplify how government works and how services are provided.
Exactly. I love that. I love that. I love that illustration. And that is what we want to start seeing more of. You know, like let's start seeing the private sector actually go to government and saying, listen, I've got data and I'm going to help you with the public transport system. Let's do this because they can. And there's so many things you can do, especially now with big data, you know, all the cloud computing, the like all the advanced technologies, AI, etc. And it is possible. So it would be really good to actually start seeing more of that happening.
And then finally, Spiwe, I mean, listeners are listening to you. They are probably so wowed and impressed. Listen to this African woman with such a command on the subject. I want that for my child. So for all the parents out there saying, I want this for my child. I don't want my child left behind. What are the skills they need to acquire to participate in this world? Whether they're going to be working as engineers in the cloud storage that you spoke about in the back systems or coming up with the software that makes, you know, the use of data so simple and exciting and creative. What do teachers need to know? What do students need to know?
Oh, right. Yeah. So, on the one hand, I guess the one thing I would want to say is that, you know, when we talk about skills of the future, there tends to be this focus on the technical skills, right? I got to be a coder. I got to understand big data. I got to be some technical guru somewhere. However, the very interesting part is that now there's also a huge, huge need for what I'd call the non-technical capabilities. And I'd love to have a conversation about this separately. But in a very brief nutshell, what we find is that with the technology, we tend to get caught up in what the technology can do, the fancy features, etc. And we tend to forget that there's people behind that technology or in front of that technology, I guess, that are going to have to use it. So there's now a whole host of skills within this digital environment that are emerging. So we've got people who are going to be able to really take the technical ideas that the technical people, the geniuses have, and looking at how those ideas are going to impact our society, not the just how they're going to be used. We're clear that all people are going to like having to shop on the dot.
Yeah.
But there are broader implications. There are broader aspects that come with such innovations that right now not enough attention is being paid to. And there's actually all these other, there's actually career options in there. And also, I just wanted to also say, not to cop out on this discussion, but to say, I'm sure you've heard the statement that there are thousands of jobs that that will be there in 5 years and that don't actually exist.
Yeah.
So
I know.
This is a conversation that I'd like to actually, it would be great.
You know what? I'd love to have it with you because you're so coherent. So let's do that and figure out if 5 years from now, do I have a job as a broadcaster or not?
Exactly.
I've definitely heard lawyers are in trouble because there's going to be no need for them. But anyway, we'll figure it out later. Piwa Chigera, it's been wonderful. She's an independent telecommunications analyst.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.